The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Tuesday night over here in the States. Over in Europe, it's, I guess, Wednesday morning. Hope you're doing well wherever you are. George Feiler is with us tonight. We're going to do a little expanded edition of George, who, of course, is the editor and conceiver and CEO of Feiler's Files, the most beautifully illustrated presentation on the internet, which deals with that biggest question of all, are we alone? And the obvious answer is no. I ran a story last night, 100,000 planets in just our galaxy. It's 100,000? Might have been 100 million. I think it was 100 million. Are suspected of sustaining life. So we'll leave it at that. You get the idea. George's weekly Feiler's Files can be sent to your electronic mailbox. All you have to do is ask. Just email George at Verizon.net. Now remember that, it's .net and .com. And the name is Major Star at Verizon.net. And a lot of people say, why can't I get through? And they're sending it to .com. Major Star at Verizon.net. And ask for a subscription, and you shall receive. We have a special guest joining us tonight. We're going to do some really fun things and take a walk back in time in ufology to the 1950s and 60s and talk about some of the people and the characters and how the whole business of ET interaction, abductees, contactees, how that has all changed. It's different now. There are some similarities, but it's not like the old days. And our special guest will be joining us in just a couple of minutes. His name is Frank Chile. He's been on with George before. He is a remarkable repository of information, and we're looking forward to another chat with him. If you look in the center column at Rents.com, you will find the most recent editions of George Feiler's Files, number 20, 21, and 22. We'll talk about those a little bit later tonight as well. They're just really nicely produced, and it's... I don't know how many subscribers there are. George, how many subscribers do you have now?
Well, we're sending out about pretty close to 20,000 emails a week. And we're finding that many of the people who receive it write me and say, well, they're sending it out to 50 other people or whatever. So we don't know how many people we're reaching around the world.
Oh, it's tens of millions. Ultimately,
our website is between 1 and 4 million hits a month. Not quite as good as yours, but people are interested.
Oh, it's huge. You're doing wonderful work. And that's great to hear. Now,
NationalUFOCenter.com, if anyone wants to look it up sometime.
That's it. NationalUFOCenter.com. Now, you're not on the speakerphone, are you?
No.
Okay, we're getting a little...
I'm on a regular phone, but...
you sound great. I'm just hearing myself in the background. That just may be a factor of my loop back from the network. Okay, now, just before we get to Frank, the most current edition, Filer's Files number 22, at the top of the center column at Rents, is... George always does feature stories before he gets into the actual submissions and photographs that he chooses for each issue. And this one is no exception. It's entitled War of the Sons of Light and Sons of Darkness. And that always reminds me of Edgar Casey and his readings, and specifically his readings, which dealt with the end times of Atlantis, when it was this kind of a war. It was a war against dark and a war against light. And in Edgar Casey's, if you ever haven't read Edgar Casey, go try and find his, it's a rather small paperback. It's online, I'm sure, at Amazon. And it has to do with the last days of Atlantis. Get his book that deals with the Atlantis readings that he gave. And you will find parallels, exact parallels, with what's going on today. And it's pretty scary if you really think about it. In these readings that he did in a trance in the 1920s and 30s and into the early 40s were so astounding in his day that people then couldn't accept it. Now, of course, he has a much more hospitable environment for this kind of talent that he had, a gift. And he talked about Atlantis and how technology had become king and the machines were running much of the show, and how human scientists back then had been mixing the genetics between human beings and animals, which we know they are doing here. The black ops boys and girls, God only knows what they're doing behind those closed doors with all the money they need. And it really is a parallel, George. I know you're somewhat familiar with all this, and I don't mean to bend your ear on it, but it is a war between light and dark, good and evil, kindness and cruelty, terrorism and benevolence. The polarization of it is extraordinary. There aren't that many fence sitters any longer like there used to be. People are getting off. Some are getting off intentionally. Some are being pushed off. The younger people aren't even on the fence because they're so mind-controlled and brainwashed now that they don't really have a clue. So they're wherever the controllers want to put them. I mean, it's really something to see. Anyway, so that's issue number 22. So tell me about this War of the Sons of Light and the Sons of Darkness. What's your editorial take on this particular featured piece?
Well, sounds funny, but I don't know if you remember back to the disclosure hearings in Washington.
Sure.
And I happened to be one of the people that was...
One of the esteemed presenters, yes,
right.
Yes.
And Edgar Mitchell was there, and sounds funny, but it wasn't big in the United States, but it was big around the world, BBC and different TV companies were there and filming. People don't realize that our news media tends to ignore this whole situation, where in many countries it's held, you know, as big news that we're being visited. Well, in any case, Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man who walked on the moon, introduced me for the television show, and I was on for like 15 minutes, like now.
Mm-hmm.
And afterwards, I went in, and he and I were alone, and I said, "Edgar, what's it really all about?" He says that the... all you have to do is read the Dead Sea Scrolls, and that's what we're facing. In any case, I said, well, the only thing I could think of that would be about this would be the War of the Sons of Light and the Sons of Darkness, which is one of the books that the Red Sea Scrolls are in. And what is very interesting is if you go to the website Scrolls in Jerusalem, you go in this building that looks exactly like a UFO.
Now, I didn't know that. They're housed in a building that is, what, shaped like a disc, a saucer?
Right. I mean,
like Jackie Gleason's home.
I've seen discs that match exactly the way this building looks. Now, I don't think that's an accident.
Uh-huh.
Here's one of the most famous museums in the world that looks holding the Dead Sea Scrolls.
We'll go through this time.
UFO. And, well, if you read some of the scrolls, which obviously are quite extensive.
Yeah. They're all translated in there for people to come and read in whatever language they're translated into. I'm sure English and whatever.
Well, a lot is translated, but a lot is not. As I understand, we still do not have all the information. But in any case.
Well, look who's controlling it. I don't mean to be political here, but they're all in the hands of the Israelis, and they'll let out what they want to let out for whatever reasons they may or may not have. It's unfortunate that any politicized country which could use these for their own devices has them, that it's not in the hands of a neutral and unbiased party. But that's what we have. You're correct. There's a lot of them that have not been translated, for the lack of a better word. And recently, there were more found. I don't know if you saw that story or not.
Right. So we're dealing with something 2,000, 2,500 years old, depending when those particular scrolls were written. And I thought that one of the most significant parts of it, which I'll read here, is warrior angels are in our muster, and he that is mighty in war is in our throng. The army of his spirits marches beside us. Our horsemen come like clouds, or like banks of dew to cover the earth, or like torrential showers.
Very interesting.
Case, the point is that they feel that there's a war that is continuing from way back in history between this evil and the forces of goodness, and that this continues. And they talk about Belial, who is essentially the devil versus the good angels and so on.
Yeah, Belial.
Right.
And if you look
all
up...
All his dominions is darkness.
Yeah.
Guilt, all the spirits that are associated with him are angels of destruction. They follow only laws of darkness, and their craving is directed toward it. Any case, even though this is old scripture, it seems to have a story to tell us today that probably exists, that there's been evil and, you might say, good people fighting one another forever. I don't know who's going to win. I hope.
Well,
I'm afraid
that right now it's definitely advantage to the dark side. I see no other way to read it. That's just the way it is. This is not a country or a world that is getting better. We are not seeing any international effort. I don't know of one major globalist corporation which is doing anything to try to reverse the rape, looting, and pillage of the planet. It's nonstop. The fouling and destroying in the environment is such that I personally believe it is no longer salvageable, that we have passed the point of no return in the mid-80s. It's too late. We are all going to pay the price. We're going to go down and out the other side. Meanwhile, of course, the super elite have been building underground mazes of living quarters, small towns, you name it, connected by high-speed rail, and they're planning on going underneath for, you know, maybe hundreds of years. They are well aware of the situation. The Fukushima radiation in the Pacific has potentially killed it all off already. We don't know. No one will tell us. Just for your information, pelicans, brown pelicans, Southern California brown pelicans, usually nest, and of course this time of year, and they're not hatching any eggs. One island that is a rookery, a hatchery, where they nest, instead of 10,000 pelican chicks, 20, as in 2-0, were born successfully this year, not 10,000. So this is probably strontium in the eggshells, killing the unborn. It's grim. I could go on for an hour on this. I won't. But
Belial. One of the things that our abductees and contactees keep on being warned about is are not taking care of our planet. That this is one of the greatest planets in this part of the solar system, and basically we're ruining it.
It's ruined. We have ruined it. It's ruined. That's my opinion. Now, you heard the word Belial, B-E-L-I-A-L?
Right.
Look up Edgar Cayce and read about the followers of Belial. He identified them in trance in the 1930s and early 40s. As being a problem on Atlantis during Atlantean times. I would submit we have the same thing now. Very interesting. The conflict between Belial and the Law of One. The Edgar Cayce readings. It's fascinating. And he didn't know about the Dead Sea Scrolls back then, of course. Nothing. Now, it's in this solar system of ours. We know the planets, and there may be life. There certainly was, obviously, life aplenty on Mars, and I suspect there still is. There are pictures of the Martian surface, George, that you've seen, that the NASA people, in some cases, have tampered with, obviously, smudging out areas, changing the shapes, flat out removing things from pictures. They've been caught. And I ran a couple of stories about that last night. Massive ruins in places of Mars where the Curiosity rover has made its journeys. It's places littered with stuff that was obviously not naturally created. You can look at it and see. Did you see the picture of the cross last week?
I didn't see that, but I've seen lots of Mars.
Yeah. Trees, water,
talks on it. In fact,
waterfalls, you name it.
Interestingly, I gave a talk in Los Angeles on Mars, and government people from Houston flew up to see it. Not only they told me that I was correct in my assumptions.
When did this happen?
Mars, a couple of years ago at the MUFON conference. That the point is that they know it, and they're kind of, from what I gathered, almost embarrassed by the fact that they're not allowed to reveal this information.
Well, the pictures, when you look at them from Curiosity, some are so digitally sharp, it's almost frightening. And others, the resolution is crap by comparison. Now, what's interesting is the techniques used by NASA and their technicians, and some of these people came forward in the Disclosure Project and blew the whistle on it, that they were doing it under instructions. That was their job, to obscure and obfuscate photographs of all kinds of things out in space and on planets that people aren't supposed to see. So what we have is technology now in the hands of people. Photoshop. They can go into a picture and literally reverse the technologies that were used to corrupt the photograph and find things and bring them out that were hidden with full intent by NASA. Now, this really ought to outrage people. We have a birthright. We have a God-given right to know our surroundings. And I don't mean just this planet. The story yesterday that I ran, forget close encounters of the third kind. Imagine galactic encounters with millions of planets in the Milky Way galaxy, each of them overflowing with life forms, complex life forms. The brand new study says it's a definite possibility. 100 million planets teeming with life just in the Milky Way. Okay? 100 million. So these poor people who are so afraid to challenge reality as it really is and would cling to their antiquated, self-serving denial are very sad cases. And I, as soon as someone figures the whole thing out, I've got it all, I've got it, I know the answers. They don't. We never have all the answers. The more we know, the further back we should step and the wider our vision and perspective should become. But that's not what happens. Galaxy teeming with 100 million life-sustaining planets. Right? So, anyway, go ahead, George. And then we got to take a break in a minute.
Well, you're correct, and there is likely to be, you know, millions of civilizations out there. Not only that, is that they're most of them more advanced than we are that have the capabilities, and those capabilities allow them to come here. As a matter of fact, a lot of abductees and contactees are saying that some of these planets are situated around suns that are actually burning out, so to speak, that are no longer effective as suns, and that they have to find some place else to come. And this is obviously one of the places that aliens are looking at. It's because it's one of the jewels of the universe. Now, most of our scientists say, well, they can't get here. It's impossible. Well, they said that about flight. They said that about a lot of things. We've, you know, reached the moon and are out further in space, Saturn and so on. If we can do it in the last 100 years, a civilization that is millions of years old obviously can reach us. And I think we are being visited.
You're right. We have to take a break. The arrogance and elitism of scientists who say, we know it all. We figured out everything. These are usually physicists and astrophysicists. And that's so sad to hear. That's not what science is supposed to be. And if we think we know it all, well, why even bother playing games and doing anything? Just end it. No more academic research, no more. No, we know nothing. Physics could change 10 times over in the next 100 years. We just don't know. 1,000 years. Hold on a second. We'll come right back with George and Frank Chile in just a minute. Talking with George Filer, as we do on the first Tuesday of each month, sometimes more than that. George's wonderful Filer's Files, available to you free You can get it. And it's a great thing to read, pass around. Just write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, star, you know how to spell star, Major star at Verizon.net. And he will send them to you. Okay. Frank Chile is a man who is, first of all, a friend of George's. And Frank has been on the program, I believe, twice before. Told some extraordinary stories about a series of UFO sightings that he was involved with. We're not going to talk about those tonight. You can hear those in the archives. Just go back and listen to George, and you'll hear Frank's remarkable descriptions and experiences. We're going to talk about what they call the old days, the 1950s and 60s, especially the 50s when George Van Tassel at Giant Rock was a big thing. George Adamski, who claims to have been involved as a contactee very heavily, and used to lift up his shirt and occasionally would show people his navel, his belly button, which had very strange emanating streaks from it. It was bizarre. I don't know how to describe it, but he was a very interesting man, George. And we had back then a paradigm of contactees, not so much abductees. That came a little bit later. But certainly contactees have been around forever, and abductees as well. But the 1950s and early 60s were the days of the contactee. And there was a name that is in that basket, along with George Adamski, George Van Tassel, and some of the others. It's called Valiant Thor. Valiant Thor. Valiant Thor has become, over the decades, a conspiracy theorist's delight and is often referred to by skeptics as an urban legend. Well, what was it? We're going to find out a little bit more about that with Frank right now. Frank, can you hear me all right?
Perfectly clear. Good morning, Jeff. How are you this morning?
Fine. Thank you for asking. And you, sir?
I'm doing very, very well. Well, you and George hit on some really interesting subjects in the last half hour, and you were indeed correct. It's a pleasure and a joy to know George. We've had some very interesting conversation.
George is
a special guy.
Indeed he is. There is only one George Filer, and they don't get any nicer. Okay.
Jeff, thanks, you guys.
I talk a little bit about Valiant Thor. There's been recently a development that occurred. An individual who's been a close friend of mine, who I've known for 45 years, has approached me about an experience he had in the service regarding the disclosure of UFOs that he said he wants to go public with now, and I'm working with him to try to get it into George's Filer's files, but I'd like to share it with you and your audience for the first time.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I look forward to that. Go right ahead, please.
Well, I'm going to use the name of Sam, and Sam was in the Air Force, and he was at a military facility in Texas, and the base commander called all the personnel to be there, and they gave them a presentation. They had to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning, and the commander said, what you're about to see is something that you may encounter during your term of service in the Air Force. We don't want you to talk about it. We know about it, but we want you to see this.
Okay.
So from 8 a.m. till noontime, the theater showed a series of motion picture footage, 35 millimeter stills, black and white and color photographs of ships that had been taken by pilots, gun camera footage from the Second World War all the way up through the 50s and early 60s. Now, this person was in service in 1963, so he was completely blown away by seeing all this footage of discs.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
Round discs. They were cigar-shaped. Some of them were triangular ones.
Uh-huh.
He said they moved at astounding speeds. He said the shape of them was something that was not anything that he was familiar with. And he said everybody was just astounded watching this for 4 hours. And I said to him, I said, Sam, what kinds of ships did you see? I said, did you see more than one ship in some of the clips? He said, Frank, in some of the clips, there were 7-6 ships, and they were doing all kinds of maneuvers. But the clarity of them was so good that you could make out remarkable details on them. So they broke at lunch for an hour, and he said it was so strange during that one-hour lunch. He said it was like everybody was in a hypnotic state.
Nobody they were in shock, sure.
In shock. After lunch, they went back up 4 hours from 1 to 5, seeing more footage. And he said a lot of them were overland, but he said there was an extraordinary number of them taken around naval ships. And he said the ones around naval ships were around aircraft carriers, battleships, destroyers, submarines. And he said they were just remarkable-looking images. And he said at the end of the afternoon session, the base commander came up onto the stage and said, what you see, we know all about. There was an incident occurred in the late 40s where a craft had crashed, and there were three beings on it. Two of the beings died, and one of them survived, and the being and the craft was taken to another military base. And he said, we do not want you to talk about this. We want you to be aware of it, but don't come to us with stories of something that you've seen, because we know all about it. And the base commander said, if you have any problem with that and you need to talk to somebody, he said, I would recommend that you go to your squadron leader and talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
If that doesn't satisfy you, I would recommend that you go to the base chaplain and talk to him. And he says, if that yet still doesn't satisfy you, I would recommend you talk to the base psychiatrist. And that's how he left it. And he said, everybody in that theater was dumbfounded. He said they all filed out. They didn't talk about it amongst each other. But he said the images were burned into his consciousness. And he said, to talk about it now, he said it's been years since his experience. He's very familiar with George's newsletter, and he thinks George brings a lot of credibility to the subject.
Indeed.
And he's in the process of that up.
Now, this, Frank, we have to take a break. Hold that thought. He also, you got something you wanted to add there. I've got to do this little commercial interruption. But I have heard and talked to someone else who went through the same kind of briefing. Now, these weren't rank-and-file service people. That's what we want to make clear, at least in my experience with the person that described this same sort of thing. But I'll be back in just a second with Frank and George. We'll continue this. So hold on and don't go away. It is fascinating material. Okay, back with George and Frank. Okay, Frank, if you can remember where you were, you said he also...
Oh, yes. He also had some experiences thereafter when he got out of the service. But I wanted to revisit that again. He said some of the images that he was shown in this movie theater on base, the craft was larger than the naval vessels. They were
yes.
this enormous craft.
Right.
And he said there was no mistaking that just as like a light in the sky. He said these were close-ups of these craft either over land or interacting with planes or interacting, flying over naval vessels. And he said that he never spoke about it again with any of the members of the base. When he got out of the service, he told me that he had three experiences. He lives in North Carolina. He still lives there now. He lives on the edge of the Cherokee National Forest. And he told me one of the incidences were about 15 years ago. He was walking on a summer night, and he said it was in August. And he said there was no moon. And he said he looked up into the sky, and he saw this enormous white light. He said it looked to be maybe of a dime held at arm's distance. And he said it came down from the sky, and it made like a V formation, and then bounced back out into space. He said That was the first one. Then there were two after that in rapid succession, and then three, and it kept going all the way up until they did nine of these. And he said it was like they were flying a pattern, like a squadron was coming in and flying a pattern, and he wanted him to see this. He's never written about this or spoke about this either. He wants to, you know, include this in George's newsletter. And he told me the last time he had a sighting was about a year and a half ago. He was married at the time. His wife, unfortunately, has passed. And they said that they were out walking, and they saw a huge orange glow. And it was just slowly going across the sky. And he said he could tell it was not one of ours. It did not make a sound at all. And he said it just created such a luminescence in the countryside as it was going over them. Well, this person, Sam, is quite religious, Jeff. And he happened to make a comment about the experience he had in the Air Force, one of the church members. This was about 6 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for this? He gets a visit by what he considered to be two intelligence individuals that mm-hmm. came to his home.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they knocked on the door, and they showed him some credentials that he couldn't understand what they were. And they said, we understand that you had an experience while you were in the service, and we wanted to come and talk to you about it. We were wondering if you were willing to let us videotape your experience. And Jeff, he was not willing to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But he said it was obvious that the person that he told who was a church member that he never thought would go beyond that
mm-hmm.
went beyond that,
mm-hmm.
and he got this visitation. Now he said, Frank, he said, I'm convinced it's time to go public and let my story be out there.
Well, obviously, as I told George, the door here is wide open, and if you want to bring him on, Frank and George would be happy to do it. And when he makes his move, and they're listening right now, they know who he is, the sooner and more completely he presents his story, the safer he'll be. He is still employed, I understand. Is that correct?
He's still employed, yes.
Okay, well, he may not be for very long, but it sounds like he's prepared to deal with that.
Yes, he's made peace with himself that he wants the story to come forward, and he wants to talk about it. And there's another individual that George and I met. He lives in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and he was at a SAC base in the early 60s out in California,
mm-hmm.
and he was one of 17 individuals that saw a huge disc come over the base at nighttime. It was about maybe 8:30, quarter of 9 in the evening, and 17 individuals saw this craft slowly pass over the base, and they said it was maybe about 300 feet in diameter, and it just went off into the desert. Well, this fella who had this experience, I'll call him Ray happened to go into town that night, and he mentioned it to some of the people in a restaurant where he was having dinner. Next morning, he gets a call to show up immediately to the base commander's office. He goes into the base commander's office, and he was really chastised for having revealed what he had seen.
Well, the walls have ears, don't they?
The walls have ears.
Yeah.
So they told him, they said, you have two choices in front of you now. You said something that you were not supposed to divulge. You're on a SAC base. You're under secrecy. Not to divulge anything. You could either spend the next 15 months in a brig, or we send you the green one for the next 15 months.
What's the green one?
So he elected to go to Greenland.
Oh, Greenland, okay.
Greenland, yes. So they put him at an obscure base in mm-hmm. Greenland, and yet, even when he was there, Jeff, he said there was aerial activity going on in Greenland. But he spent the last 15 months of his term in service there,
mm-hmm.
and he wants to tell his story, and he wants George to include that in a newsletter as well. So it's interesting.
I'm not saying I know who this gentleman is, but I certainly have heard this story before somewhere in the last 22 years of doing this program, or one very much like it. It may be that they like to send people who have knowledge that they're suspicious about in terms of them being able to keep their mouths shut, and they do send them to Greenland rather quickly. I've heard that several times. Or it's this same fellow. But there's a pattern here, and this is very intriguing to me. So in addition
to
bringing...
One of the other 17 individuals who had that experience.
That's right.
One of 17.
There you go. Well, that's probable. And when George brings it out, it'd be great if he comes on here with you guys, both of you, and tells his story. I'll block out 3 hours if necessary. We'll do the whole thing.
And well, he has a lot of detail about his experience.
Yeah.
He has a lot of detail about his experience.
Well, once we get it out there and it's in the archives, I'll put it up for, as a free listen on the homepage. It will go worldwide. Boom.
Okay.
Now, they're listening right now. They know who this man is. I hope they don't threaten him into silence. It may be time to let him go and tell his story. They have control of everything else. I don't know what they're worried about. So, well, we'll see. Anyway, the invitation is certainly there.
I will extend it to them.
Yeah, please. Okay.
So going back to the Valiant Thor story.
Yeah, let me read our a little bit about this story to our audience here, and then you can tell me more about it. It's a very interesting. The story of Valiant Thor began back in 1957. He was, by the pictures that we have, a very handsome man. It could have been a movie star. Just had it all. Perfectly, you know, great face. He was a man who visited the Eisenhower administration as well. He seemed quite normal, except that he was said to have no fingerprints and was able to see through walls. It was said that he was a Venusian, and he had landed his ship near Lake Mead in the Las Vegas area. Area 51? S4? The ship was referred to as the Victory One. Valiant claimed he was the leader of all Venusians who were on Earth, walking amongst us, and he spoke in a dialect unlike any other known on the planet. He reported that his race of people lived within Venus, inside the planet, not on the surface, which is most inhospitable, that they were very attractive, intelligent, less violent than mankind, and he said they were sent here to protect man from himself, including nuclear devastation. According to Thor, he did not meet the president, but did meet with his Secretary of State, Dulles. A man named Frank Strangis then came forward, saying that he had met with Thor and his brother could walk through walls. He said that he often traveled with them and others through space, and then the story got stranger from that. But Frank Strangis is another character in this Valiant Thor epic. Tell us more.
Well, Dr. Frank Strangis was a minister. He also did some work in the military and military intelligence. And photographs that were taken of Valiant Thor were taken behind the home of Howard Menger in Highbridge, New Jersey in 1958. There was a series of black and white and color photographs taken by August C. Roberts. And August Roberts was a photographer during the Second World War. And Dr. Strangis was also a biblical scholar. And he would go around doing lectures and talk about life, the possibility of life existing on other planets.
Uh-huh.
Well, after one of his lectures, August Roberts presented these photographs to Dr. Strangis and said, "These are pictures of a being who claims to be from Venus, whose name he said is Valiant Thor,"
uh-huh.
And he and his brother and the space lady met at Howard Menger's house, and I was there, and I took these photographs. So thereafter, every time Dr. Strangis would lecture, he would show these photographs, and he said, "These are photographs reported of a being who's visiting Earth from Venus." Well, he was doing a lecture in Washington, D.C., and this is in 1959, and at the end of the lecture, people were crowding around him, asking him questions, and a woman approached him and said, "Dr. Strangis, I need to talk to you immediately." And Dr. Strangis said, "Well, I'm with some people right now. Can you wait?" And she said, "No, I must talk to you immediately." So he excused himself from the other people, and he went into the office, and she said, "The photograph of the person that you're showing is asking to meet with you." And she said, "I have an assignment to bring you to the Pentagon. Tomorrow morning I'm going to pick you up at 8 o'clock, and you're going to be meeting this individual." And he said, "Well, I don't have any clearance to get into the Pentagon." She said, "Don't worry about it." She said, "Just follow what I tell you, and you will gain access." But the next thing, she picked them up. Do you have to go to break?
Yeah, but that's a great place to pause. Don't worry about access. You'll get right in.
Okay,
fascinating story. So we will continue with Frank Chile. That's spelled C-H-I-L-L-E, and George Filer. Remember, if you want to get a free weekly subscription, just write to George at Major, M-A-J-O-R, star at Verizon.net. Be right back.